This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. It's good to have you listening today. President Obama and his Chinese counterpart this week announced agreement on a plan to curb carbon emissions. The president is in Asia to meet with leaders to discuss a variety of key issues.
But the climate agreement faces an uncertain future owing to the opposition of congressional Republicans. The GOP now controls both the House and Senate, which will impact the president's ability to accomplish the foreign policy aims of the last 2 years of his administration. Art Sear is our foreign policy contributor. He's Clausen Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business at Carthage College, and he's with us in the studio. Nice to see you again.
Mitch, it's always a pleasure to be with you. It's always warm at UWM, no matter how freezing it is outside.
Well, let's begin speaking of maybe climate change with the agreement on carbon emissions. China has not been engaged in a lot of the international discussion on this issue. What has changed, if anything?
I think the physical environment has changed noticeably over time, which influences the politics of both countries, even though they're obviously not an open society. The two greatest polluters, as the media rightly emphasizes, in terms of carbon emissions, are China and the U.S., but the trend lines are dramatically different. We are reducing, and pretty quickly, the total volume we emit in the U.S. China's going the other way. And it's apparent to the leaders there that for all kinds of reasons, that shouldn't continue. The former Soviet Union and to some extent satellite states, but especially Russia and the contiguous states in Central Asia are just cesspools in terms of terrible pollution. That should be emphasized more by environmental activists. My personal bias is there's also an anti-capitalist attitude on the part of quite a few of the most vocal activists on the environment. So they tend to neglect that part of the world. But it's important, and I can assure you Beijing is very, very aware of the price that's to be paid over time if you don't control these environmental pollutants.
Now, both the U.S. and China have been noticeably absent from signing on to a lot of international climate agreements. Is this an indication that there's sort of a parallel structure that's setting up for reducing carbon emissions around the world?
That's possible. I'm an academic, which means I'm very good at predicting the past and don't pretend to know the future. However, a lot of the UN efforts going back to the Kyoto Accords now some years ago do seem to be rather utopian and impractical. Albeit the goals are desirable, their processes tend not to work very well, which is why Kyoto hasn't really been implemented. And my guess is that a combination of nation states and major multinational corporations is where the real progress is going to be made. I don't think it's worrisome that we're operating at least somewhat independently of the UN. The UN does very good work in other specific areas, but not in this one.
Now the success of the agreement with China would seem to hinge on a somewhat unlikely prospect, that is getting the buy-in of a Republican-led Congress, which is seeking fewer controls, not more.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, who's a pretty vocal critic of a lot of the environmentalist movement and represents, not surprisingly, oil industry and other energy interests, is going to be a pretty hard line chairman. He's likely to be chairman of the Environmental and Public Works Committee. And that's going to make it difficult for the White House and others.
And, of course, that's not the only area in which the president and Congress are likely to clash. How does this split government affect how other countries will approach relations with the United States? Do they have to get buy-in, you know, have discussions with both the president and congressional leaders at this point?
I think that's desirable, and I think it's a test of executive leadership. And it's an opportunity for President Obama to establish a stronger record in his last 2 years. I do think in industrialized nations generally, especially in Europe, we have a lot of symmetry of interests and the same kind of public pressures. Japan is different. And ultimately, our allies, Japan, may prove to be more challenging in this area than our still adversary and rival, China. But again, I would focus on the nation states and government policy.
Well, and so speaking of Japan, the president and his treasury secretary are soon headed for an economic summit in Australia. And one of the messages that they are expected to carry is the need for Japan and Europe to get their economies humming more than they are today. What is the significance of that?
I think it's business as usual. Going back to the 1970s and 80s, we've been pressing our European allies to do more. Once Bretton Woods broke down, we used to nag them about defense issues in the 50s and 60s, and we still do to a degree, but sometimes significantly. But it's more and more economic coordination. And whether it's in the 1980s with Secretary of the Treasury Baker in the Reagan administration, pressing very hard for Europeans to do more to speed up their economies and also help us in the effort to keep down the value of the dollar. These things go on and on. I don't think the current environment is nearly as serious or as challenging for U.S. policymakers as it was in the 80s or certainly during the stagflation of the 70s.
But there is a certain amount of concern among exporting nations such as the United States about, I think it's a new set of consumption taxes that are going into effect in Japan that might impact consumer spending there.
It's important. Japan, you're quite right, Japan remains a very protected economy in all kinds of ways. However, one thing we've learned is the U.S. has continued to run in sheer volume, in sheer numerical terms, enormous payments and trade deficits. Starting in the 1960s, it's not just the balance of trade and payments, but also the kind of investment that's coming in. We're a global magnet for investment. Japan has lots of cash in their economy. They need new technical – they need new capital investment and technical sophistication. They're slowly opening up, and I think the need for investment and expertise – provides leverage that will hold down lingering protectionist sentiments. It's kind of a long-winded way of saying they're still one of the most closed big economies in the world.
How do you think that the Republican-led Congress is likely to shape policy in a variety of other hotspots in the world? The Middle East, for example, Africa, where you know the world is still trying to get a handle on the Ebola crisis.
That's a very good question. The Senate is more important than the House in foreign policy, although they're both going to be very important, I assure you, and a real challenge for the Obama White House. However, senators are encouraged to be, by tradition, and tend to be, in terms of their ambition, distinctive individuals, and we really should look to individual senators. Mitch McConnell, I'm certainly not in any way a partisan, and I'm not a Republican, but he's been impressive to me as a pragmatic deal maker who's helped keep things from getting even more out of hand. When things are really serious in the last few years in terms of government shutdowns and other things, he and Harry Reid seem to be able to get together, as has Paul Ryan and Democrat Patty Murray, the senator from Washington. I do think that McConnell wants to be a very significant Senate majority leader, which means he's not going to be particularly ideological, at least insofar as he can help it. I think that there are very interesting and impressive senators in both parties who have a tendency to look for pragmatic solutions. Bob Corker of Tennessee, who comes under a lot of Tea Party pressure, as does McConnell, is one of these. He's interested in foreign affairs. He's been a leader on the Foreign Relations Committee, and he's been a prime critic of the budgetary stagnation and actually irresponsibility on the part of the Congress. I'd look to individual senators and how they're able to work with others in the Senate at a time of rigidity on the part of both the White House and the House. Finally, we're hitting the total of 100 women in Congress for the first time. Not enough. I'm sure there'll be more. But it's increasingly clear that women in both parties in the legislature are more willing to work pragmatically. They meet together. They network together in a way that's different from their male counterparts. And I'm not running for office or pandering to any population, but I do think that is extremely important. I honestly do, that the proportion of women is growing.
Well, Art Sear, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
Art Sear is professor of political economy and world business and the director of the A.W. Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. He's also our regular foreign policy contributor.
A Film in Progress is based on the real-life story of a Russian Jewish immigrant to Milwaukee, We'll meet the producers, including that immigrant, when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.